This is the Friday, March 10th, 2017 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Ted Seifert. Ted, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We are excited to have you. I did not get a chance to discuss the cotton market with you during the program. Dropped 70 cents on the week. Ted, where does she go from here?
Yeah, we're running into some pretty stiff resistance. You look at the 80 mark for cotton. We've spent very little time over the 80 mark, even in 2012, drought year. That is a formidable resistance. And talking about USDA's baseline numbers, 11.5 million acres. That's a pretty sizable increase year over year. While we have had that influx of Chinese demand, which we really needed, and we're back to export levels that we haven't seen since 2010, 2011, you do think that the bigger acreage going in, you know, the prices have probably bought that acreage, maybe even slightly more. You would think now is a good time to cool this market off. So I think producers, cotton producers, really need to be looking at hedges in here. And you might just be looking at the beginnings of that chart rolling over. And even if it's not, I don't think we're too far away from, again, getting above that 80 levels has proved to be a very tough thing to do. I'm not sure we have the fundamentals to do it and stay over it. So right in this neighborhood, or if we go higher, I'd sell it there too. But I think producers need to be looking in for hedges and cotton right now.
You know, 6 weeks ago, 70 was the tough nut to crack. And now we're 10 cents higher. Boy, it's tough to look a gift horse in the mouth.
Agreed.
When you get this kind of a price movement.
But realize, historically, that 80 number has been a very difficult number to stay above.
Okay.
So, again, even if we get through it briefly, I think the likelihood of staying above it just isn't there. While I like the cotton fundamentals, I just don't think they're bullish enough to keep us at that elevated price that's historically been a big problem for us.
Okay. So would you be hedging, 100% if we get north of 80?
No, I mean, for new crop, without having an idea of what the weather is going to be like this growing season, I don't think I'd ever go to 100%.
50?
Okay.
75?
Yeah, no, I think 50 is a much more reasonable number.
Okay.
You know, somewhere in that area.
Okay. And then would you re-own it if we do get that break back down into the low 70s?
No, I think you can re-own calls. It's not a bad idea. But I always have a hard time going from 0 to 50.
Okay.
Unless it's in a car.
Well, there you have a hard time stopping at 50.
Yeah, well, then, there you go.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, listen, I'm more of a, I like to scale in and scale out of things.
Okay.
You know, so to go from 0 to 50, to me,
even
just feels awkward.
Even at historically high levels, I mean,
but
80.
I guess what I would say is that I would love to see guys at 50, but I would hope that not starting from 0.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I'd like to see guys at 50% right here, basically.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you, Ted.
Absolutely.
Now, we do have some great questions from our follow. It has been an eventful 2 weeks in the commodity trade, in the world of agriculture.
Absolutely.
Between the RFS rumors last week, the fires affecting Kansas, Oklahoma. We talked about it on the program, but geez, it's heartbreaking to see those images.
Absolutely.
Our first question comes from a little farther north. This comes from Paul in Minnesota. He's wondering, he's got a very long question. I'm going to summarize it for you here. 50-50 rotation, corn, beans, how do you differentiate yourself? He says, how does the guy in Minnesota set himself apart versus the guys in the I states and the Dakotas who are on a straight corn and bean rotation? So I think Paul's got a little more flexibility. What would he be looking at this year to differentiate himself?
Set apart as far as what now?
I mean, do you roll in hard red spring? Do you take some acres out of corn or beans, look at something else?
I think the interesting thing to do this year is to go more corn than beans and go against the grain. You know, because if we do have a weather issue and we've got more bean acreage and we're able to absorb that better, especially with a massive South American crop, corn might be the darling. Corn might be the one that has more upside potential if we had something like that. I like corn. I like wheat. You know, I think wheat, unless everybody does the same thing, we end up planting a lot more wheat acres. But, you know, we're cutting acres out on wheat, too. So you look at where the opportunities are. It's not always where everybody else thinks they are. Right now, everybody thinks the opportunity is in beans. And listen, you know, based on where crop insurance levels are set, and if you've been able to sell those prices and you're hedged at those prices, we know we're going to be profitable on beans. So I understand why we're going to get more bean acres. But when it comes to trying to do something like that, you're trying to be savvy and trying to predict the future, I suppose if I were going to take a risk, I like the idea of going a little more corn heavy because that's against what the trend is. And again, if we were to have a problem, I think that means more upside potential for corn.
Let me float this at you. Have your cake and eat it too type scenario. Plant more beans, sell more beans, especially if we get to that 10-21 level on the board.
Yep.
That's going to get you fairly close to $10 cash, $9.75, I mean, in a lot of places in Minnesota.
Right, and so we've done that, and we've been urging anybody who's adding beans or going to a more bean-heavy rotation, why are we making that decision? Well, we're making that decision because of the price and where it is.
Right.
Okay, then we have to protect that price. Because if you make that decision based on 10, 20 beans, and then beans go to 880, well, that was a bad decision.
Yes.
Right? So we have to protect the price if that's the reason for making that decision.
So let's roll. We're going to plant more beans, make those sales, if we get that chance again. Then I just want to buy corn on the board, plant it in Chicago.
Right. Yeah, you can pay for farm corn. I like that idea, and we've been doing a lot of that.
Okay.
Not exactly that, but no, I like the idea of owning the $425 call spread for December corn.
Okay.
There's been a lot of weather things this year. Again, we're not hearing about it this year because the weather guys last year were talking $5 or $5.50 to $6.50 corn, and that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have a bad taste in our mouths about that. We don't even want to hear about what the weather might be for the summer and things like that. But you look at it. I mean, Chicago had six record highs in a month of February. Six out of 28. Wow, that's a huge percentage.
No snow at all in Chicago in the month of February, right?
Or January.
So really,
January
and
February.
This year.
It's never happened.
Wow.
No, we have not had a snow in Chicago since, I think, December 12th or something like that.
Jeez.
It's been, 74 days or so. It's a record. Records all over the place setting records. Ice pack on the Great Lakes, which was one of the big things last year that everybody wanted to talk about. Oh, it's the lowest it's been since 2012. Well, 2011, 2012. We're well below where we were in 2012. I think also record low or close to it.
So let's say we get that weather scare. And now, Ted, March 31st, planting extensions coming up. What are your numbers now that you're working
with? Well, before we get to that, though, one of the things that weather-wise that concerns me the most or scares me the most about this year is that, we transitioned from El Nino to La Nina last year. And that La Nina was really quite weak and looks to be ended at this point. And that El Nino might come back towards the end of the growing season, September, October, which could mean a very awkward transitionary sort of time frame during June, July, and August. If that's the case, we could be going through some, really non-favorable conditions and then pouring rain and then hot and dry. It doesn't take a crop failure this year to get some pretty significant upside because, again, we've been building that demand. It just takes something that's maybe a little bit less than what we have been seeing in the last, a mediocre crop, finds some pretty significant bid.
What is significant upside? Are we looking, that $4.50 is probably in the cards. Is $5 in the cards?
Well, I've been doing a lot of balance sheet studies, and I think $5 corn, I think that's reasonable to think. If we're in the low 160s to 158 national average yield, I think you're at $5 corn pretty easily.
Okay.
And
trend line's 173.
Yeah, but that trend line's been really spiked up here over the last couple of years. I think it'd be relatively, listen, 5 years ago, if we had a 161 national average yield, oh my gosh, that'd be a fantastically wonderful crop, our seed technology is getting better, and that certainly makes a lot of sense. But, what if we had a year that was a little bit of a hiccup, not a disaster, not a 2012, but just a little bit of a hiccup. And we've had 3 years where if you take those 3 years out, each one of those would have been a record. The three highest yielding years we've had have been in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And I'd say we've had maybe 5 years of very good weather or very good crops at this
point. Since 2012.
Yeah.
Just to throw in a little sand or a little wetness on your blanket. I don't know how to...
Wet blanket.
Wet blanket. Listen to Elwin Taylor from Iowa State University, climatologist this past week, said he does expect above trend line yields. Looks to be fairly favorable weather for the growing season.
Yep, I've heard it.
So that's...
How did the weathermen do last year?
Exactly. So it's a buy the rumor, sell the fact situation.
Fair enough. Well, that's the thing. I don't think that we're going to build a big weather premium into this market.
Okay.
So that idea of a spring rally, we had it last year, but that was because everybody was so worked up about how the weather was going to go. This year, we don't want to hear it. We're not going to build that weather premium into the market. That spring rally, we may have already seen that.
Okay.
So, just like in 2012, if we do start to see something happen in weather, it might take a while for the market to react, but when it does, it can be, sharp.
Okay, well, now we're talking long-term into the summer. I want to bring us back.
Yeah.
Rough week. Chad in Randalia, Iowa, wants to know, should we expect to see corn and bean prices bounce after this week's downturn? This was volatile.
Yeah.
And if so, what are you watching for levels as a near-term bottom?
Okay, so beans are at a very key support level here. And we started to test it at the end of last week. Last few times we've gotten to that support level, we've had a very healthy bounce off of that.
Okay.
This is where the technical traders, the funds, they like to defend that. I'm not so sure that we're going to get this big, glorious bounce from this level. I think that the selling pressure that you're going to get from the hedge or from the harvest in South America might keep this bounce minimal. And I'm worried that we're gonna violate that support and maybe take another leg lower. So
okay.
If you get a 10 or 15 cent bounce in soybeans, I think you really need to look to adding sales if you haven't already. But I think any bounce you get here in the beans, I think you look to sell. And as I was saying earlier, you know, given the fundamentals that we have, unless something were to change with the South American forecast mm-hmm. and there was a problem with harvest, or something were to come out of the RFS as far as lowering
yes.
tax credit or reinstating tax credits. If those two things don't happen, and we still have the same fundamentals that we're looking at today, 2 weeks from now, if we're not 30, 40 cents lower in soybeans, then I think you got to stop watching fundamentals and start looking at the fundamentals and start looking at the money flow.
Okay.
Because the fundamentals to me are really quite negative, especially at the prices that we're trading at right now compared to year over year.
Right.
I think we should see that downside potential here now.
Okay. Next question. You brought it up a little earlier. Viking in North America. He's on Twitter at VikingKing6.
Yeah.
He wants to know, what is your view on the RFS? Does the point of obligation matter to farmers? Do we, growing the corn, have to care about what's being discussed from this leaked memo that turned out to not exist?
Wow. That is a really complex question.
Yes.
Because the simple answer is no. The simple answer is, you know, if RFS is going to increase ethanol usage by going E15 mm-hmm. year round, and we're going to be producing more ethanol, then that's great. If we're going to reinstate biodiesel tax credit, and we're going to be producing or using more domestic soybean oil, that's great. The problem is where we run into an issue, and where this gets really, really complicated and really complex, is that if we start taking things away from ethanol producers and their profit margins start to fall, then maybe we're not producing above RFS,
right.
which we are now by a fairly good amount.
11-12%
yes.
of the blend.
Absolutely. So if we take that away and then we're only producing at the mandate, that might actually be lower than where we are now. So there's reason to be kind of concerned about that.
Okay.
You want to see this go well for the ethanol producer. You want to see this go well for the blenders as well. But the idea of having more corn mandated, I think, is great. For a while, I've been saying it, and it's not a very popular opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a capitalist, and you know, we produce above the RFS for a reason, because exports are good and the profit margins are there. I'm more pro-profit margin than I am pro-RFS.
Sure.
So if those profit margins stay good, I don't really worry about what happens with the RFS, because we'll keep exporting, mm-hmm. we'll keep producing. So. But at face value,
yes.
it's very difficult to tell which way
because
the RFS
it comes back to RINs, the renewable identification numbers.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it's we could spend 45 minutes on that topic alone.
Well, I mean, just yeah, explaining RINs
yes.
can take
45 right.
minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And then I still wouldn't understand
and how that
them.
Market works
right.
and who's getting them and how that's
yes.
used and how that affects profit
yes.
margins. Long story short, that does affect part of the profit margins for the ethanol producers.
Mm-hmm.
If you take that away and their profit margins come down, then you take away part of the incentive to continue to produce over RFS. And if we do that, well, then hopefully we have to move the RFS floor
right.
high enough to make it as good, if not better, than where we're at right now.
Currently is today.
Yeah.
All right, Ted. I do want to ask you this. One question, one word answer, Ted Seifried.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going into detail. One word. Tim and Crookston wants to know, from now on, does the South American soybean crop get smaller or bigger? One word answer.
Weather.
Okay.
Meaning we'll see.
We'll see.
We got to see what the weather is, but I think bigger.
Okay.
Knowing what I know right now, I think bigger.
Gotcha. Big crops get bigger.
Yep.
All right. Commodity question of the week, Ted. Could you tell us what the wheat to corn price ratio means, and is it important? Do you care?
I mean, do I care?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sure. So the wheat to corn price ratio, which is the same thing as the corn soybean, which
mm-hmm.
is the more popular one that
yeah.
we talk about. Okay, wheat trading where it is right now, how many times do we have to multiply that, and how many times do we have to multiply corn to get to the same number?
Right.
So what do you got wheat at?
We're at, wheat is at July wheat new crop 456
yep.
versus 380 for corn, so
right.
we're at just one three.
Right. Okay, so... The thing there, the tighter that gets, the closer corn gets to the wheat price, the less likely it is we're going to plant more wheat acres, and also the more likely it is that we're going to use wheat for feed.
Right.
Okay, so but the higher wheat is compared to corn, the less likely we're going to use wheat for feed, which is very beneficial for corn because corn's lost a lot of feed demand to wheat in the last couple of years.
You bet.
You know, so that's why we watch it. That's why, you know, we look at it for acreage. We look at it for the demand side of things. Although, again, the one that's looked at more commonly is the corn-soybean ratio. That's one that I think we talk about on a daily basis, especially when we're getting into acreage decisions like we are right now. So.
Right.
Yeah, but we always look at the comparison between crops for different reasons. But right now, acreage is the main win.
Perfect. Well, Ted Seifert, thank you so much for taking the time to join us this
week. Absolutely. My pleasure.
And join us again next week when Dan Huber joins me here at the Market to Market table. And as you may have noticed, it is still fundraising time here at PBS. And if you find value here in Market to Market, please consider making a pledge and invest in this service that provides you with the news and market analysis you've come to know and trust. And be sure to join us next week when we'll explore how a lunchbox staple is getting an out of this world makeover. So until then, thanks for watching. I'm Mike Pearson. Have a great week.